Full spot, which as everybody know, it's a claim on the CIMT, the CMB, of around 5 degrees. But my claim is that some of the things here are actually much more general, and the physics is quite interesting of how these things appear. Also, I'd like to say that these are actually two decoupled themes. One is actually how you create such big bubbles, which can actually be bigger than horizon, and a separate question is what would such regions do to CMB, and they're decoupled, right? So even if our particular model of inflation that creates this thing is wrong, you know, we still think that if you have big regions of space which are under that overdense, for any reason, what will this thing do to CMB? So the basic idea we have for producing these things is this thing called multi-stream inflation, which Yiwang worked a lot a little bit. And you don't need to have a very explicit model to understand what's going on. Basically, you have a two-model inflation in which the inflaton rolls down some sort of minimum potential, and at some point there is a small hill in your inflation potential, and you essentially get a spontaneous symmetry breaking in which parts of the universe follow this path of the inflatory potential, and different parts of the universe follow this path. Okay. And of course, this will create something that will resemble essentially a domain wall, because the field will have to interpolate between this path and that path at the edge of this essential domain. But because these things then actually recombine, it doesn't really matter. Essentially, you can these things will simply disappear. And that's why essentially you don't want this hill to be too big, because if it's too big, then you get problems with the field getting stuck there. So it's a gentle hill which allows inflation to follow different paths in different parts of the universe, but doesn't produce anything as cosmic defects much longer. And of course, the main idea is that the number of e-folds going this way is different than the total number of e-folds going that way. Then essentially, different parts of the universe will have different expansions, right? And will have at the end different final densities, because they will have expanded by different amount. And to get more concrete, essentially you don't need to write on explicit potentials. All you need to do is to understand the physics, is to simply put in some typical numbers that will appear. So this is our inflation going on starting here. So the observable inflation starts here. This is the horizon today, and then the delta N1 e-folds after the beginning of observable inflation, you get your split happens, and then of course causally connected regions will decide whether to go one way or the other in potential, but causally disconnected regions can follow different histories. And then so say we have this one region that actually decided to go into the less common path. It will actually end deflation at different time, because it has slightly different number of e-foldings. It will reach preheating temperature slightly different. So we have the other parameter, so-called delta N2, which essentially encodes the total difference in the number of e-folds between going straight here, following the one path of deflation, or going to the less likely path. Okay? So this gives us two parameters, delta N1, which tells you when did this bifurcation started, and delta N2, which tells you what the difference in total number of p-folds. And then, of course, you have a third parameter, which is called P, which is simply probability of falling into this less likely path, and typically you claim P to be less than 1. Of course, you can get very similar scenarios if you produce some tunneling. What really matters is, you know, exponentially suppressed, so P can be arbitrarily small. Now, given that you have three parameters, luckily you can actually then have three observables, which you can think. There is actually the first thing is how many such bubbles you will produce inside one horizon. The second thing is what will be the size of such bubble. And third thing will be what will be perturbation of such bubble. And here we use this zeta parameter, which is, you know, conserved on scales larger than horizon. And then if you simply follow the basic physics, you can relay these three things with the three parameters you're plugging in. Okay. And there is another thing which you need to do is, of course, claim what kind of shapes these things will be. And with a lot of hand waving, we claim they should be roughly spherical, simply because these are essentially rare events, right? So to have rare events are typically spherical for the similar reasons why extremely rare halos are spherical. Later on. They're rare because we're saying when you have too many of these things, they'll be seen all over the place, right? So we're aiming for producing maybe 2-3 such things within the horizon, but not many more, right? So they're rare in that sense.
No, I still understand why they are. I don't have an intuition why they're spherical, in a sense. This is, so my picture is that at a certain point, in a short window of K, you have a huge amplification of the perturbation, no? So at the end is what I mean. The isoperturbation direction is amplified in a very short region.
Yeah.
So, but why it gives rise to spherical things? It's not clear.
Because I mean, I don't think you can actually apply this in arguments, because I think locally within one horizon, as soon as this split happens, the field will become the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you, I don't think you can think of having this huge fluctuation.
I think the best.
As I understand it, the two paths, the points, they're not quite the same. So presumably you could set this up so that you need maybe a 3-sigma fluctuation in the transverse direction to push you over the not preferred path, and then it is a rare event.
Ah.
Okay. Yeah. Exactly.
Ah. So you are preferring.
Okay. Okay, so I think most of the guys say go here, right? And then some of them will essentially simply, you can make down and you can make this just so asymmetrical. A few of them will go here.
But is that required, or is that just what you want to do? Because there's only
this is what I want to do. Because I want my idea is let's see what happens if I create this large bubbles, right? But you see, because this is a creative flashing, they can be arbitrary a bit. They can be bigger than horizon. This is not.
So this requires some sort of asymmetry in the potential, right?
Yeah. So this potential must be symmetric. If it's not asymmetric, there will be no observable difference, right? There will be some sort of wall appearing and disappearing.
Is it a bit tilted, is it?
Sorry?
It's a bit tilted to one side to be.
It's a bit tilted to one side, or it has slightly different length this way. I mean, it's easy to cook these things up, right? Basically, I think I don't want to go into details. I would probably spend 3 days and write exact functions to give you the look.
Andrew, it seems the stuff in your model is not so crucial that your path eventually joins back. I mean, all you need is a multi-field landscape, and your different paths are naturally going to have different number of equals. Basically, that's what we're talking about.
Okay. In principle, it's not crucial. They can keep going, and then maybe when they hear this thing. What I was really worried was what's happening at the edge of this thing, right?
Yeah, all you want is isocurvature perturbation to pick you off different paths and different
fields. Yeah, and you get some different
paths. But you don't want like a stable domain bulb because they will dominate.
As long as you don't have domain bulbs.
But that's the thing. That's why they're joining. As long as
you don't necessarily need to have domain bulbs.
But that's why they're joining. If they don't join, then there's no guarantee that you don't make domain bulbs.
Right, but it's not a crucial feature.
Yeah, for the predictions that maybe you're doing,
Okay, so once you create these things, let's see what you need. So say you want to do something at CNB, which is of the order of a couple of degrees. Let's just first see what's the horizon size as a function of redshift, right? So this is the angular size of horizon as a function of redshift. We have a couple of degrees at the level of CMB. And then, of course, what it's clear that if you want to have something, let's say, of the order of 5 degrees, it is going to be bigger than horizon if redshift is bigger than 100, and essentially smaller than horizon if redshift is less than 100, right? Actually, it's quite interesting that the horizon size, I've never realized this, but if your redshift less than 10, essentially you're never going to see horizon unless you're maybe 21 centimeters or something like that, right? So here we're deeply, whatever you do at low redshift, this is one, you're very much well inside horizon. So let's then talk about two regimes, right? And we're going to talk about the first regime are the bubbles, which are much bigger than Horizon, okay? And are at high redshift, say redshift bigger than 100. And this is something you can do because the curvature is conserved there. Or we can talk about bubbles which are much smaller than Horizon, say a couple of hundred megaparsecs at redshifts of 1 to 3, in which you can use Newtonian physics, right? And the regime in between, I think, is quite hard. So you don't want to do that. So super Horizon bubbles at high redshift are characterized by uniform zeta inside the bubble.
Right, so just thresholding moment. So you're going to end up with lots of substructure on all the scales inside the bubble.
So the bubble has small, because small scale power is quite small, right? You just have a different mean potential.
No, I mean, like, there's going to be anti-bubbles inside the bubble and anti-bubbles inside it. But you have scale invariant spectrum essentially by the curvature mode. So the original Gaussian.
It's not a scale invariant because this bifurcation happens at some time. So there is a scale.
The original Eiler curvature mode, yes.
But the isobubble is only relevant at a particular time.
Yes.
For the rest is irrelevant. So this gives like this approximation. It's important only at a given k.
No, it's a point-wise process. Like you have like this super like horizon modes in this thing here. And whatever occurs on like one side of the peak goes one way, whatever is on the other.
Only sub-Hubble or the horizon scale fluctuations that cause that. So
I'm talking about super horizon scales, right?
Super horizon scales at that time of the bifurcation. Yeah.
Right, and this is just going to threshold the original like, the curvature field, like in real space. So it's going to be like as if you paint the Gaussian.
So no, this thing was inside the horizon, it was simply blown away, right?
Well, that's the question.
Well, the idea is that basically here you create this bubble, but then the universe kept getting inflated, right? So now you have this huge sub-horizon thing that has slightly different number of total number of e-folds, but it still has the same small scale power spectrum.
No, I mean, why do you think that the original thing is a bubble? Because you're thresholding in real space here, essentially, right? So you're thresholding scale invariant Gaussian random field.
Yes, that's right.
So in scale invariant Gaussian random field has a lot of substructure to it. There is like, you know, clumps within clumps within clumps.
But yes, you can have dynamics inside the thing, right? Which will equalize, right? I mean, this is not energetic.
It's super horizon. I'm kind of confused, actually.
No, it's a super horizon now, but it wasn't super horizon, it was created, right? It's inflated away. You had a lot of e-folds between the split and the potential blah, 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 and the inflation.
So I feel that we should discuss this later.
It seems to avoid basically the usual under-rate. Probably what you want is the isocurvature perturbation directions to be massive before bifurcation, and then become actually low mass at bifurcation. But there will still be some, and then whatever very small perturbation will split one way or the other. So when you put the small mass.
I guess I'm confused about the scales. So you're talking about these things happening on the large scales at the bifurcation point, or at the very local scales at the bifurcation point, and then blowing up.
Small scales at the bifurcation point, they're essentially. One horizon size of the bifurcation point.
Okay,
but horizon and the bifurcation, but then it's blown up, right?
Okay, no, this is okay.
Okay, whatever, but you cannot forget because now I'm simply talking, suppose somebody gave me these bubbles, right? So, okay, so you uniform zeta inside the bubble, as far as this thing goes, but you know, of course you have a small scale structure, I mean, you have normal fluctuations. And then, of course, what happens, you have two effects that actually give you a signature in the saxhole. The first thing that is the fault is emitted inside the void, it will simply be affected by the Sachs-Sachs-Wolff effect, right? You have to climb out of the void, and you'll see it, right? And the second thing is that at high redshift aggregation is still not negligible, right? So you have a decay of potentials from radiation donation here to matter donation, and this gives you something to like, again, And of course, you can make this more more formal, and these are equations that gives you this thing. You have some sort of intrinsic fluctuations. Then you have this Sachs-Wolf, the emitting, and then you have this early Sachs-Wolf from the mesh radiation. And this is the profile you get out, right? And it looks quite bizarre, but I think it is right. And this is for three different bubbles of the size of a gigaparsec at redshift 800, 1000, and 1200. And I'll try to explain what happens here. So we have So what happens is that at least I think we often have wrong perceptions of how the distances work, right? So from cosmological perspective, 800, 1000, and 1200 are essentially the same distance. They have the size of about 6 degrees there. And what you have the last scattering surface, and then you have some sort of huge bubble here in this last scattering surface. And if the photon comes from the center of the last scattering surface to you, then essentially all that you will see, it will have some sort of change in potential here at the time it was emitted, and then it changes temperature when it exits the bubble, right? If you go to the very edge, then of course there will be no such effect, but you will get effect from the photon, the difference in the value of the potential between the photon entering the bubble and the photon exiting the bubble, right? But the way how geometry works is that essentially for most of these things is already in deep matter radiation, so the profile here is essentially constant. And then as you approach the edge of the bubble, then the point at which the photon exits the bubble gets closer and closer to radiation domination, and therefore you get this increase in the profile. But when you hit the very edge, then you don't get any effect from the Sachs-Wolf, and then you simply start here, right? And you get simply difference in the potential between this point and that point. And this essentially gives you this funny drop at the edge of the bubble, and you carry on with zero. And the interesting point is that this has a very particular shape, and you can actually test it quite concretely on if somebody gave you the real data.
Plus cutting
surface, right?
Yeah. So I guess the final thickness of last concept will smear things like this, right?
So you essentially just see the smear profile of the bubble, right?
Sorry?
You're just going to see the smear profile of the bubble, right?
No, well, I don't think that. Yeah.
But that's, we've ignored that for super horizon.
Yeah, because for super horizon, the bubble is smear, right? It's a such sharp edge. Last function is the one. The smearing is a super function. Again, the bubble is essentially in the potential, right? In the potential of psi, and if we go to lower redshift, I need to smear it through transfer functions. And this is what happens to a bubble of 100, 200, 300 megaparsecs. And you see, as you go to a smaller and smaller bubble, simply the transfer functions make them smear them more and more and more, okay? But the interesting thing is that if you calculate what's the density here, right, you simply allow, which you take the derivative of this thing, then of course the density, so this essentially potential has the shape of a bubble, but the delta then has shape which looks like this, has a lot of derivatives, okay? So this thing is not what you would naively expect as in bubble in the sense of its under dense inside. Essentially, it's under dense in potential, not in density. So you need to have distribution of matter at the edges of the bubble exactly such that you have a different potential inside. So this is not exactly compensated bubble, right? It must be not fully compensated. So the interesting thing is that in this picture, right, there's no point in looking at whether there are any fewer sources inside, for example, cold spot if it's there 300 megaparsecs, because all you should see is some sort of edges, right?
So if you have such bubbles at small redshift, what kind of effect they can give you? They can do a couple of things. The first thing is if they're at a very low redshift, they can essentially give you signal via the ISW effect, standard integrated Sachs Wolf. So the potentials decay at low redshifts, and therefore the photon comes in, the potentials decay and comes out, and you see the bubble, right? If you go to higher redshifts, when you're in matter domination, when you're pure matter domination, potentials essentially stays constant. So you have ice in the city universe. And then essentially you get the same effect, but now it's second order, right? Because first order is zero, and the second order is also known as a Rishama effect. So this is not quite high. We're talking about five. And then the third thing you can think of, and we're still thinking whether we're doing this calculation right, is, of course, when potentials evolve in this blob, you have large coherent flows, and basically the flows from the back of the bubble don't quite cancel the flows from the front of the bubble, and you get a kinetic SZ which might contribute. So if we took a look at first at so small bubbles here, about integrating Sachs Wolf, we get essentially the standard formula, right? The change in your potential size, and then just the integral over the profile of the bubble. And if you plug through the mass, this is roughly the profile of the bubble you should get. It has very nice, essentially this is just projection of a smoothie sphere as you see it along, right? And this is for a couple of hundred megaparsecs bubble at redshift 0.5. For the Rishama, it's actually surprisingly nice because it's a spherically symmetric system, so we can solve exactly to second order. And therefore you get this perturbation temperature, which now gives you the integral over this thing. And this thing, again, is some sort of derivatives of the bubble. But this effect gives you very, very different profile than ISW, but because it's second order, it requires much bigger perturbation. So this is roughly what you get at redshift 3.5 with the Rishama effect. Essentially, you see the edges of the bubble because this is where the potentials evolve, where the action happens. And this is for three different sizes of the bubble. Now you can combine the two and see what are the relative contributions. This is low redshift 0.5. This is 3.5 with slightly different zeta to get the final numbers out. And as expected, if you have a bubble at low redshift, you get nice, essentially seeing the profile of the bubble, like negative. If you have something that contributes via Rishama, then you get these spikes. Okay. And again, it has very, very distinct profile, which is not even so much as a bubble, but some sort of ring, right? And finally, we also have this Sunyaev-Zeldovich effect, which I didn't quite follow this calculation, but if you do this, I'm not saying it's probably right. I'm just saying I didn't follow it, right? So what Niyesh tells me is that this should have exactly the same profile as the ISW, but with a bunch of very different prefactors. So you can plug these things into equations and say, well, what would be the ratio of this Sunyaev-Zeldovich, Kedik-Sunyaev-Zeldovich, or Stryker-Vishniak, no matter how depends how you want to call it, versus ISW. If I take the ratio of the two, this thing is cancelled, and all I get is the ratio of these stupid prefactors. And again, I see that this effect should become more and more dominant as I go to higher and higher redshifts, right? But actually, it's of the same order of magnitude. We're talking about order one, right? So, and this is essentially more to do with the fact that ISW dies, right, than this thing much bigger. So you see, it's a plethora of quite interesting effects. So how does this relate to the cold spot? So this has been detected using spherical Mexican hat filter as an excess kurtosis in a bunch of papers, quite old now. And at most, they turned out initially there was just an excess of kurtosis, and then it turns out that most of this excess comes from a single spot, which this guy then called cold spot, and it has been about 10 degrees across, and about it's about 250 microkelvin cold. And a lot of different people have done work on it, and it's been like disproven. People look for excess of sources and they assess, and there's nothing there. But I'm saying that basically, within our picture, you can have a superhorizon bubble very close to last current surface, which you're not going to see by looking for source or anything like that, right? And even if it's low redshift, it can be redshift 5, it can be redshift 3, and then it's going to be, it's essentially, it's only, you're only going to see edges, but not the actual bubble. And plus, what we now have, we have profiles, so in principle, you could make a special search for this thing. So what, yeah.
You know, these things what you call bubbles, like basically as curvature mode conversions happen into heating. So essentially exactly the same effect to threshold the rare Gaussian field excursions. So
but the thing these are fundamentally different because they happen at preheating, so they happen quite late, right? So they will be small.
Right, exactly. But this thing is scale invariant. So you convert what you convert is the same as in your model. The large-scale structure all goes from the large-scale structure into isocurvature mode. It's a very unique. Conversion happens point-wise, the same, exactly the same as in your model. The field has to decide whether to go left or right at a given point in space.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same physics, essentially. Yeah.
So you're saying that I'm wrong, or there's
that was the introduction. So to cut the long introduction short, we have a more significant cold spot analysis on the table right now. It's not published yet, but if you want to know, talk to me.
Ah, okay.
So
introduction
has nothing to do with concrete. No relationship with data production.
No, it's a direct relationship because these things, like you know, like these cold spots arise in these models.
So the analysis of the
production. Right. So what this gets you, like, it's you get non-Gaussian rare, intermittent conversion of the fields. This happens during preheating that can be set up at my location things.
Sorry, I don't understand this difference. So there is a difference because in his case, all the spectrum after the bifurcation does not, all what happens after the bifurcation points is irrelevant, no? So his isocurvature fluctuation after the bifurcation is not relevant.
His large scale structure is coming from the original large scale structure in the curvature mode.
Yes, but only before the bifurcation, only for modes which are.
Yeah, exactly.
So in your case, not today.
Well, it just happens later. Exactly. So, if you're talking about like, you know, 10 degree scales in all these cases, this is all coming from large.
But the difference is that yours is a scale invariant and here it's not a scale invariant because here it happens at particular time, particular scale. Yours happens at all the scales. Right?
So perhaps you have some sort of selected scale as well.
But you have a select, but it seems to me your case you have just a scaling on a power spectrum and you do for people.
The heating horizon is just a time limit, right? So it's just all of it is coming from isocurvature mode originally there. So.
Yeah. So it is a scaling variant. All right.
A scaling isocurvature?
That's good.
So, yes. So you have original isocurvature mode, then you convert it to curvature, at which point it becomes non Gaussian and has size.
But there is no preferred scale in this. In this scenario, in your scenario.
Well, there is a horizon size when it happens, when it's tiny.
That's why I'm saying there is no preferred scale. Because then observable scale, there is no preferred scale.
Yeah.
But here, everything just happens at once. So it's much easier to rule out your model than it is to rule out mine.
Which makes it a good model. So just to finish off one more slide and then we'll go to dinner. So if you look at what things we need typically zeta e to the minus 5 for something very close to horizon, to 10 to the minus 3 to the minus 2 if it's much closer, and size is 100 megaparsecs to a gigaparsec, and you want, say, a couple of them per horizon, right? So they're not so common, so they might see one or two, but not many, right? And then this actually doesn't apply that much fine-tuning. N1 is of the order 1, P has to be small, which is, has to be essentially bent to the typically randomized 3, randomized 4, depending on where exactly you put it. But we have some sort of target mechanism, I don't think it's an issue. And 2 is has, however, has to be small. The number, so this is the difference in the number of people to the 2 paths. Has to be of the order like this number. You can call this actually if you want. And I'm also going to check. What I'm saying, it's not. You can cook up pretty much anything. So that's it, and that's how my spots. I'm done.
Yeah, so if your model is right, we went to this to the cold spot area and measured the cosmological parameters just from that region, would we then measure different, like, because number of equals is then different, so you measure different spectral index and all parameters, is that what you would expect?
I think you'll definitely measure different omega, yeah. Right? Different. Actually, I find it quite hard to think because on one hand, you have this nice picture of having different inflation, which we naively think produces different mean density there. But this is not what happens because mean density is essentially mean density is given by your heating. So I claim that inside the thing, if you're measuring the universe inside the bubble, you'll measure exactly the same. Well, more modulo, slightly different spectral index, maybe, or something like that, because the paths are different. But I think, yeah, the density will be the same, because only the walls are where the action is happening, right? So the bubble looks like this in potential, but in delta, it only has this wiggles, and delta from the bubble is zero, right? So the over density is the same as outside.
Oh, okay.
So inside, maybe small scale fluctuation is slightly different because this depends. You know, you might get some features in the power spectrum. The question is, if you measure the properties inside the bubble from the outside, then of course all your photons go through this edge, and then God knows, and then you have surface thing.
So would you have? So you only had 2, and you only had 1 bubble. But could you have many, many different paths and have a large number of bubbles and get basically some...
You can be arbitrarily baroque. Okay. I mean, in principle, actually, I look at the volumes. Having a bubble intersect with the last kind of surface is not a fine tuning. So you can imagine having, you know, 5 of the delta zeta of 10 to minus 5. 4 of them are close, you don't see them at all, they're too small, and the 5th one is close horizon, that's okay. So in principle, there is no tuning in having one bubble close to horizon or the other. But in terms of having a lot of bifurcations and a lot of different bubbles, yeah, of course, you can. I mean, in theory, you can do everything, right? It's a game. You can have 6 and 11 dimensions if you want, right?
Well, it seems like the natural step after 2 would be a nearly infinite number, right? 10 to the 500 or something, right?
Okay, so let's take one again. And then before you leave, a couple of announcements. So dinner will be at 6.